Ultra looks for a new home, helping women run for office, and we meet a unique group of cheerleaders. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Well, the folks who run the Ultra Music Festival decided not to return to Virginia Key next year. So where will they go next? We'll discuss that and the impact that Ultra had on some of the wildlife near this year's event. Also, many political pundits call 2018 the year of the woman, with a record number of women running for elected office. Getting more women politically active is the focus of the group Vote Run Lead, and they're hosting an event Saturday called Run As You Are, training women who are interested in running for office. And the new movie Palms looks at a group of female senior citizens who formed a cheerleading group. We're going to meet the real-life Palms from V at Aventura. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. For more than 20 years, the Ultra Music Festival has called the city of Miami home. Each spring, tens of thousands of electronic music lovers come here for the loud music and the party, often to the ire of residents sick of the traffic and the fights. Last week, Ultra decided not to renew its contract with the city, terminating a two-year agreement for the festival to be hosted on Virginia Key Beach. According to many fans, this year's festival had its problems. The new location on Virginia Key proved difficult for folks trying to travel back to their hotels after the concert. It also negatively impacted some of the fish and wildlife near the historic beach. We spoke with the Miami Herald's Joey Fletches and our environment reporter Jenny Stiletovich about the impact of Ultra on Miami and its wildlife, as well as the future of the festival.
They were surprised. It was actually an interesting moment in City Hall because everybody was paying attention to a meeting about an unrelated matter, the Coconut Grove Playhouse. They had called a special meeting Wednesday to hear a testimony from the public and to vote on that matter. And it was during that meeting that a courier hand-delivered a letter from Ultra's legal team. They were terminating, they were exercising their right under a clause to terminate the contract themselves. And so the city administration, they were upstairs quickly calling, you know, administrators who were free into a meeting, the mayor, to talk about it. And then shortly thereafter, the city manager went downstairs, handed copies of the letter to each of the commissioners, who sort of stared down at it for a little while. Some folks looked a little puzzled, some disappointed. And they didn't talk about it until afterward because they were in the, you know, like neck deep in the middle of this testimony and this other matter. But it really kind of landed with a big thud. Commissioners and the public were expecting a showdown, really, on Thursday.
Do you get the sense that they were happy this has happened because now there won't be a showdown? That's been resolved.
I think to a certain extent, yes, but I think that there's a big loss that's recognized here in terms of revenue and in terms of, you know, economic impact overall. This is money that has gone out the door. And that's, you know, not even considering the businesses that benefit the hotels.
Real quickly, let's go back a little history on Ultra. It's been around for a while. Why did it move again to Virginia Key?
It had spent 18 years on Miami's downtown waterfront between Bicentennial Park, now Museum Park, and Bayfront Park. And their contract, after the 2018 event expired and they needed a renewal, the chairman of the Bayfront Park Management Trust, which is this semi-autonomous government agency that manages the programming at the park, it's chaired by a sitting commissioner, Joe Carollo, even though it's not his district, he manages those deals to bring concerts and events. At the same time, Carollo was in some political feuding with Ken Russell, who is the district representative in downtown, though he doesn't control Bayfront Park. So there's a bit of a power struggle there. And that sort of all mixed into a political atmosphere that allowed those residents to really hammer home their point and say, we don't want our park to be taken up by Ultra for 3 months out of the year. We don't want to hear it anymore. And when Carollo brought a contract that he had negotiated, he then said he wasn't going to vote for it. And that sort of set off this chain reaction where the rest of the commissioners said, well, if you're not going to vote for it, we won't. And it was a unanimous decision to kick Ultra out of Bayfront Park.
There were a lot of issues, obviously, to putting it in Virginia Key. Obviously, the folks there were like, well, we don't want it. and there was a fight about that, and then the environmental issues, and then just getting people in and out. They knew ahead of time this is going to be a challenge.
Because this was approved, the Virginia Key move in November, they had already started selling tickets. They were already promoting. They had dates. They were already well into what would have been planning for Bayfront Park, so they had to pivot, and they only had 4 months to do so.
Because it's about, what, 60,000 people?
That was the maximum capacity. They did not sell out, but it was definitely north of 55.
Yeah, and you were about to say, because you were there, and you followed this, and you had to be part of the debacle.
I took the bus there, and the shuttle bus from right outside your studios here at the Omni, and went over to the festival on Friday night, the first night, March 29th, and then the problem started at the end of the night at 2 a.m. when, you know, somewhere north of 50, 55,000 people left at the same time at 2 a.m. There were two ways to get off the island for most folks. There was either getting on a shuttle bus or walking, walking across the William Powell Bridge.
And a lot of people decided to do that.
A lot of people did. There wasn't an infrastructure really set up, and the people that were working the show weren't completely organized to be able to safely direct people to the right shuttle. There was confusion. There was frustration. People have been standing all day. They're hot. They're dehydrated. They're drunk, whatever. And so, yeah, it was taking forever to get on the buses. Some people said, I'm just going to walk.
How much did that play a hand in Ultra deciding forget next year?
I think it was significant. Ultra spoke in the message that they sent to their fans via social media when this came out, that the fan experience was really important in their decision-making. They put out survey. Thousands of people responded to their fan survey after this year's Ultra, and if those responses reflected some of the reporting that I had done that weekend, people were not impressed. They didn't fly as far as they flew. There are people from all over the world who come to this event. They didn't pay as much as they paid to stay at nice hotels downtown in Miami Beach, wherever, to wait an hour and a half or 2 hours for a bus back to to a place where they can call an Uber, because they couldn't call an Uber onto Virginia Key. That would have created a whole other morass, a whole other problem. And then they didn't pay to walk almost 3 miles across a bridge to Brickell to call a ride share. It was not the experience that they feel their fans deserve.
If Miami loses EDM, does it hurt the Miami brand? Miami is so many things.
It's a really good point. Miami is a lot of things, and it's definitely made a mad dash to be all of those things, because the city is growing, the downtown is growing, the urban core is becoming denser. So it makes you wonder where EDM and even hip hop, for example, Rolling Loud was another Bayfront Park. It was another Wynwood then Bayfront Park event that now has gone out to Hard Rock. And that's like the premier hip hop festival in South Florida. So we're not sure. I mean, it's an unclear time.
I was joking with my producers about this. I mean, yeah, Miami is home of the bass sound, right? As Vanilla Ice told us, it is the home of the bass sound, but we don't have these things all the time. Right. If we lose them, does it really hurt us?
It could. So Ultra is a homegrown event, right? It started in South Beach. And then it spent 18 years downtown on the waterfront. And it was founded by people who grew up here. But
I can go to a lot of places for a festival like this.
Yeah, you could. You could. So why do people come from Ultra? And that's a good question. They've managed to attract, though, one heck of an audience. I mean, they've used Ultra Miami, the first Ultra, as a springboard to start events on every continent in the world, and they probably are making more profits in each of those events elsewhere, but Miami's the flagship.
So the last thing that came up is the word homestead,
yes.
The raceway. Mm-hmm. So that's all. It's just that's popped up, but we don't really know what's happening with that.
We're not sure. What we do know is that there's a conversation happening. The government down there has confirmed that the Speedway reached out to City Hall to let them know there are conversations happening. But that's all we know. And we don't know if Ultra's talking to anybody else. This is going to be a pivot point for Ultra, because they're going to stay somewhere in South Florida. We just don't know where. And what is it going to look like if it's not on the sexy Miami waterfront? Is it going to be out by the Speedway? Is it going to be, in Hialeah? One of a council member actually was tweeting at Ultra the day of the announcement.
I saw this.
And he was saying, come to Hialeah, come to the racetrack.
Is there a place in Hialeah? I guess
that would be the only place. And you can imagine there's probably municipalities. We have so many here in Miami-Dade, small cities that might think, you know what, this could be payday.
I've been talking with Joey Fletches, reporter for the Miami Herald. Ultra Music Festival has decided not to renew its contract with the city of Miami for next year, though there are reports that it could move its location elsewhere, maybe to Homestead? Well, one of the concerns raised about the festival was the environmental impact the music had on fish in Key Biscayne. Our reporter Jenny Stiletovich has been looking into that. Jenny, what are some of the fish and sea life populations along Virginia Key that environmentalists were most worried about?
So there's a couple of protected animals. There's sea turtles, there's crocodiles, there's manatees. The crocodiles and the sea turtles nest on the beaches on the Key, and then the manatees, there's a manatee zone where they come. There's seagrass on the west side of the island where they come to forage.
So how do you describe the effect of loud bass music on sea life? Well, I mean, or what did they find?
So the researchers put microphones in their tanks before and during the concert. And before the concert, they recorded the noise levels, and it basically almost sounded like white noise, like the kind of thing that you would play trying to get to sleep. It's a very soft, ambient sound. During the concert, however, you could literally hear the music through the water.
How far, by the way, is their research, from the stages?
I had calculated it at one time. I think it's just a few hundred yards from the stage that was on the beach. There's two stages. There's a main stage over by the Marine Stadium, and then there was a smaller stage on the beach. And that smaller stage was supposed to have acts that weren't quite as loud. But if you listen to what the researchers recorded, it seems pretty loud.
And you talk about research, you talk about the folks at the University of Miami.
Right, the University of Miami researchers.
And you spoke with them about this, and they were tracking all of this. And they captured that sound, by the way, in the tank before and after the festival. Let's take a listen. And isn't sound amplified underwater?
It depends on the angle, but yeah, it's the angle that it enters the water. I asked about that, and they hadn't quite calculated that. It's sort of a more complicated measurement.
You know, the other thing, too, is the research done, or are they going to, continue to look to see if there are long-term effects?
I don't think that UM will invest any more research resources into it since the concert is moving. But again, I think NOAA's ongoing research project is looking at that. And I will say that NOAA's project probably did not consider music festivals.
Do we have a sense of the long-term impact, though, that this could have on marine life? I mean, we just had that test that they did for a little while.
Right. So not from this particular festival, because that was sort of a quick hit study. They wanted to see what would happen just, while the concert was going on. There is a bigger research project that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is conducting that looks at ocean noise pollution overall. There's increased noise pollution from oil exploration, pile driving, increased number of boats on the water. There's all kinds of things that are making the ocean a noisier place. And they have discovered that noise can interrupt marine life's behavior. So it can make it harder for fish to find prey to eat, harder for them to find other fish for mating. There's all kinds of behaviors that they feel like this increased noise is going to interfere with.
So the organizers of the festival had put forward this plan to ensure that the festival was following proper environmental protocols, including reducing waste, pollution, and the preservation of nature. They also said that they took steps to mitigate noise emanating from Virginia Key. Do we have a sense to what extent that plan was actually followed?
I don't. I know that they put some shipping containers in between where the stages were and the research tanks at the university, but I was told that those shipping containers were empty, and so there was some question about how effective they might be.
You know, we had a long conversation with the representative with Miami Waterkeepers ahead of Ultra on this program, and we talked to them about the issue. They oppose the music festival, obviously, being on Virginia Key because of the environmental issues. And I asked if there is a safe place in the region for this festival to happen. And so obviously the thing that's popped up now is maybe Homestead. But do we know if there is any place in South Florida where there isn't some wildlife that could be affected? Is there really any region? Is Homestead a good place?
I think Homestead is probably a better place. I mean, the Speedway is already there. It's probably pretty loud on race days. It is 2 miles west of Turkey Point, the nuclear power plant, and a couple miles west of the shore, too. So fish wouldn't be an issue. There's probably wading birds that go back and forth there. But unlike Virginia Key, where there is a critical wildlife wading bird nesting area, I don't think there is one around the Speedway. The Speedway is a place that has had high noise events for years.
And that was our environment reporter, Jenny Stiletovich. Earlier in the conversation, you heard from the Miami Herald's Joey Fletches. You could find more of their reporting on Ultra on our website, WLRN.org, and we will keep you updated on the proposed plans for possibly moving to Homestead. But always find us on social media. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. I'd love to hear from you in South Florida. Where do you think the Ultra Music Festival should go next? All right, coming up, have you seen the new film Palms? It's about a cheerleading squad in a senior citizen community. I'm going to introduce you to the real Palms here in South Florida. That's coming up next on Sundial. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Well, this weekend, a new movie came out. It's called Palms. It stars Diane Keaton. It's about a group of retired elderly women who formed a cheerleading squad. Well, what if we told you that there's a group here in South Florida who've been doing this for a while now? It's a group of 10 South Florida women who call themselves the Viva Girls. They live at the retirement community center V at Aventura, and they range in age from between 80 and 98. Some of the Viva Girls were former cheerleaders, while others have never tried cheerleading, but they're fulfilling this long-lost dream of being on a cheer squad. Rosalie Lewin and Nancy Siegel went to the premiere last Friday. They were cheering in their outfits before the screening. They're part of the V at Aventura senior cheerleading squad, Viva Girls. They join me now in studio. Rosalie and Nancy, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
It's such a pleasure. All right, first of all, where did this idea come from? Who started this? Do you remember?
It was Rosalie. Barbara Margolef. She left the V. She's living with a daughter in New York now, but probably come back. And she brought up the idea 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And spoke to me about it. And I said, yeah, sounds like a great idea. So we put a thing in the mailroom, a list, and for people to sign up for it. And we had quite a few ladies come.
But what was that conversation like? I'm just curious as to, you know, when she said, hey, let's start a cheering squad. Where did she say she got the idea?
I don't know. We thought it would be a lot of fun, and it would bring people together. We'll bring some cheer, lift up their spirits. And, for us, it's exercise, it's camaraderie, it's doing things for the community.
You said a lot of people saw the list and they were like, yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah. But then basically they said, well, some of them had walkers. They had trouble with balance. And, they took themselves out of it.
Yeah.
But basically we took everybody who wanted to be in it.
So you started this group, and it's 10 people,
and
right? 10 women.
We're nine.
Okay, gotcha.
And we decided what kind of shirts we wanted, and the V supplied the shirts, and we did everything else. And the pom-poms they supplied. I made the pom-poms for the shoes, and
And because you came in your uniform, you got your pom-poms, and you're going to give us a little taste of what some of the cheers in a minute. Nancy, when you were in high school, you wanted to be a cheerleader, but you weren't.
That's right. I always wanted to be a cheerleader my entire life, but I just didn't qualify for being one in high school.
What was it like back then when you were trying to become a cheerleader? What did you know?
Oh, it was kind of a click.
Yeah. Oh, it's
the click.
So clicks have been around forever.
Oh, yes. And the click, the people in the click were always the cheerleaders.
Right, right.
And it was really hard for an outsider to get in.
So when
I found out there was a cheerleading squad at the V, I decided that I would fulfill one of my life's dreams.
Yeah.
And become an actual cheerleader.
Right.
We don't do all the regular, you know, cartwheels and things that the cheerleaders do nowadays, the kids. But we have different songs we sing, different cheers. We actually do some dances, the Macarena, the chicken dance, and the hokey pokey.
There you go. These are classics.
Oh, yes.
Definitely.
And when we first started, people were saying, oh, this is ridiculous. You know, you're never going to stay together and the group will just dissolve.
Right.
But we...
You're still going strong.
Oh, yes.
2 years later.
Even stronger.
But, you know, and because I know that Rosalie, you were a cheerleader in college. But Nancy, you know, for you, I mean, what does it mean now?
Now it means... actually, I have come more out of my shell, and I was afraid to even stand up and speak in front of my classroom at school.
Yeah.
But now, being here at the V, I have changed like 180 degrees my lifestyle, and I'm outgoing and into a lot of things at the V.
You're having fun.
And it feels like we're on a cruise.
And those could be
a permanent cruise.
A lot of fun.
And
definitely.
Being in Florida to me means being on a permanent vacation.
There you go. So Rosalie, yeah, it was college. It was a dance squad or a cheer squad?
It was, we were basically, we did formations at football fields. It was basically a service organization. This goes back 70 some odd years ago, and in those days, we didn't do acrobatic things. We wore skirts and bobby socks.
Yeah.
And we had a couple of guys that did the acrobatics, but we basically did formations on the field at football games. I went to Brooklyn College, so we did a BC, or we spelled out Brooklyn, and the opposing players. We did NYU, I have pictures of. And basically, it was a service group that did, volunteer and charity work in the school.
Well, by the way, I mean, because you brought some photos, and this goes, like you said, this goes back some 70 years. Here's some photos from the group out on the football field. We have these, by the way, on our social media, so please check these out. I'm just amazed at the outfits you wore. Skirt past the knees, and then you had a jacket.
Well, we wore a black blouse and a black skirt.
Yes.
And we had a white blazer, yeah. And when we performed, we had white beanies, so you were able to see us on the field.
I mean, very different from what, you know.
What it is today.
What it is today, that is true. So for you, what does it mean to be on this squad? I mean, Nancy says this is, because by the way, she said earlier, this is a bucket list thing.
Oh,
so she's got that off the list now. What does it mean for you to be able to come back and do this?
Well, it's fun. It's fun doing it. And it's nice bringing a smile to people's faces. You know, you're in a independent living place, but we go over to the care center, which is a nursing home, skilled nursing or assisted living, and people are sitting around very quiet, and we come and we see smiles on their faces, and they clap, and you know, they all enjoy it, and it's very rewarding to us to do something like that.
I'm talking with Rosalie Lewin and Nancy Siegel. They are part of a cheerleading squad that was formed a couple of years ago at the V at Aventura Retirement Community Center. Their cheerleading squad is called Viva Girls. And, you know, we're talking about this because maybe you noticed this weekend this new film came out, Palms, and it's in theaters now. It's about a cheerleading squad formed at an Arizona retirement community. It stars Diane Keaton, which, by the way, they both went to watch. The whole squad went to watch, and we're going to get their review of the movie in a minute. But you know what, Rosalie, Nancy, tell me too, where are some of the places you guys go? Where does the squad go? Who do you perform for?
Well, we perform every month at the V. they have the birthday lunch, which is normally the third Tuesday of the month, and whoever's birthday is within the month comes, and they're invited to that, and to bring, they could bring a guest. And we go in, and we do a few things, and sing, you know, wish them a happy birthday. We have a happy birthday cheer, and it's where, you know, they look forward to it. Because this month, the third Tuesday, we were not going to perform, and they were disappointed. You mean you're not coming?
Yeah.
You know, and so anyway, they made it the second Tuesday, so it's going to be tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So we can perform.
There you go. Nancy, what's it like when you show up? What, you know, the reaction from people?
Oh, everybody is very happy. They start clapping right away, and it's just all smiles, and people who are walking by in the hall while we're waiting to go in.
You know, I think about what you said a second ago when they were telling you, this is ridiculous and it's not going to last.
Right.
Where are those people today?
That's the complete opposite. Everybody can't wait to see us.
All right. So, you know, give me an idea. Can you do a little cheer for us? Tell us, show us what, like, one of the cheers you guys do? Anything you'd like. Go ahead.
Do you want to do cheer up?
Okay.
All right, let's do cheer up. What is this one?
Well, it's we come in and, like normally at the birthday luncheon.
Right.
We'll come in singing We Are the Beaver Girls and couldn't be prouder.
If you can't hear us now, we'll shout a little louder.
And then we do I've got spirit. Yes, I do. I've got spirit. How about you? And then we do cheer up. It's time to live it up. We are marching on. We keep our spirits up. The Viva Girls are here to cheer you up.
And I love it. It goes from there.
And then we go, you can do.
Oh, yeah. We do dances, too. Yeah. The Macarena.
Yeah.
The chicken dance. And also the hokey pokey.
All right. So after the show today, we'll do a little video. And get you guys, give us a little bit of the cheer. How's that?
Okay.
All right, perfect. Let's do that. So, because that way people get the chance to see a little more of what you guys are like. So you went to watch this movie. And I want to know, first of all, your thoughts. Did you enjoy it? Did they do a good job? Nancy?
The movie was fun and just a movie that made you feel good.
Yeah.
But there weren't very many people in there. We were probably 20 people.
Yeah.
And there were only about 4 or 5 other people who came into the theater itself.
So the movie this weekend for its opening weekend,
yes,
came in second place.
But it did.
In the box office. I think, unfortunately, you know, the Avengers is still out.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
You know, well, kids got to go see that, the Avengers. Yeah. But, I mean, for you, you know, Rosalie, what did you think of the movie? Do you think that it was, oh, I should say it's accurate, but do you think that it did, you know, it was respectful? And
yes, definitely. I went basically, I wanted to see if they were doing some routines that we could copy. but even though they were probably about, you know, supposedly 20 years younger than all of us,
yeah,
they really didn't do anything that different, yeah, really.
But, I mean, did anybody at any point stop and say, hey, wait a second, we've been doing this a couple of years. You took the idea from us.
That's what I said.
That's what I said, too, all along. They based... You know, they copied us.
Well, the movie is out in theaters now. Again, it's called Palms, but the real Palms, the real cheerleaders, are here in studio with me, Rosalie Lewin and Nancy Siegel, part of the cheerleading squad at the V at Adventura Retirement Community Center. Their cheerleading squad is called Viva Girls. By the way, after the show today, we're going to do a quick video so you could see a little more about them. Some great photos we've got up on our Facebook at WLRN Sundial. Rosalie, Nancy, thank you so much. You got a show tomorrow, or a performance tomorrow.
Right,
so
yes.
Best of luck for that. But yeah, we're going to get that video after the show. Thanks so much. Had a lot of fun today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All right. And how about a little Bring It On? Remember that one? That was another cheerleading movie. Well, still to come, are you a woman thinking about running for office? We'll tell you about an event that could help you launch a political career. That's coming up next on Sundial. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Well, the race for the Democratic presidential nominee is getting much of the national media attention, even though we have got lots of time. But there are thousands of local and statewide seats up for grabs next year as well. And candidates seeking those offices are getting prepared now. There's a massive nationwide event this Saturday focused on training women interested in local and statewide offices to give them the tools to start those campaigns. The event is called Run As You Are, and it's in 20 cities across the United States, including Miami. Now, the event is put on by the nonprofit organization Vote Run Lead. Erin Villardi is the founder and CEO, and she's joining us now from the NPR studios in New York. Erin Villardi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Also joining me here in studio is Glenda Rosado. She's the Miami community organizer for Run As You Are. Glenda Rosado, thank you for being here with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Erin, let's start with you. There are tons of programs out there focused on getting people ready for a political career. What makes Vote Run Lead unique in its messaging and who it's targeting?
Well, I think one of the myths, actually, is that there are lots of organizations on the how-tos, when there are just really a handful of us who are really teaching people the step-by-step process necessary. There's a lot of new endorsement groups coming out. There's a lot of new groups recruiting. But that middle work of really training people, training women on how to run from the beginning of how to talk to your family, about your ambitions for public office, how to talk to your employer, all the way to, you know, your filing deadlines and hiring your campaign team. So what we do differently at Vote Run Lead is our methodology is really centered around this idea that you can run as you are. So many women take themselves out of the game or think they have to transform into a political robot in order to run. But we're telling them that the skills you have, the networks you have, the talents you have are enough right now, and we can teach you the rest.
And I wonder from your experience, you know, how many myths do people have about running for office that you feel you have to clear up?
There's a lot of myths that we have to debunk. You know, for men and women, they often think they have to have, you know, a legal degree, a law degree. For women, they have to think, I have to wait until my children are older and I have more time. So we have this other layer on those myths that we have to debunk. And we also have this mindset for women where, you know, we see this in the private sector as well, where women look at our job description and that if they don't fit, you know, 2/3 or 100% of it, they don't apply. Same thing goes for public office. So what we have to do is sort of tell women to jump in now, and that so many of these skills can be on the job learned as you're building your team and as you're door knocking. But in fact, actually, we need more non-traditional candidates. We need folks who don't have a legal background and know their communities and can speak fluently about what's happening locally versus, you know, we have enough folks who have a law degree in public office.
Yeah. Glenda Rosado, I wondered from you is what myths did you have about politics before you decided you wanted to jump in? And I mean, because you want to do more of the behind the scenes. I'll get into that in a minute. But mm-hmm. I mean, what did you learn to say, oh, I thought politics was this, and realize it's different?
I think it's something that we never think about, you know, as women, like, you know, going to politics. It's, I don't know, growing up, you know, we don't hear that. So I think it's a great opportunity now, like, to see other women, to empower other women, and just, yeah, why not? Like, we can change and we can, you know, be part of the change in public office. Why not?
Yeah. Erin, you were talking about, you know, again, trying to not just debunk the myths, but also because a lot of this is about, it's not the big political offices. It's not just running for Congress or the White House. We're talking about the local, you know, offices. We're talking about city government, PTA, or, you know, school board. And also mm-hmm. state legislature. For this event, mm-hmm. by the way, you know, you, part of it is you're taking a little bit of direction from some documentary filmmakers, right? For this first event.
Well, one of the things that we've created with the help of documentary filmmakers is a training module called Why You Can Only Run As You Are. And it's a series of prompting questions for women to look back at their life, at their experiences, and find moments in their lives where they've demonstrated leadership that so often goes unrecognized. And pull those stories out and lift those stories up, because what really resonates with voters, what really resonates with your neighbors, is being able to make that emotional connection and to tell them, you know, hi, I'm Glenda Rosado, I'm running for city council, but let me give you an example of a time in my life where I, you know, sort of challenged a bully, or I spoke out on behalf of someone else. And demonstrating leadership is so much stronger and so much more resonant than listing off your 20 policy priorities and you've already lost the voter, you know, at number two.
So what
we're teaching women is that storytelling technique.
Erin, do you have an example of one? Do you have a female politician who used that storytelling to really resonate with voters?
Absolutely. You know, we right there in the Broward County School Board, Lori Olidef, whose daughter Alyssa was unfortunately lost in the Parkland shooting, came to speak at our training and then stayed on to learn that storytelling technique right here in South Florida. We have two alumni in Congress. Lauren Underwood, the youngest African-American woman ever elected to Congress, came to our training in Chicago and really used that storytelling technique, because that's what you're doing. You're going around and you're sharing with people who you are, and you're building trust with them. Anybody can have a list of ideas. Giving people examples of when in your life you have demonstrated that leadership, or you have faced and risen up to a challenge, that people can carry that in their image in their mind, and then they can feel it in their heart. And that's much more something they're going to remember than, you know, how you feel about K-12 education policy. You need that in your back pocket, but your story is really what builds trust with voters.
Right, right. Glenda, what your background's in journalism, right?
Mm-hmm.
What made you interested in getting involved in politics?
Well, I'm all about women empowerment, and I think this is a great opportunity to connect with women in Miami and organizations. And I've been talking with amazing women around the city, and there's a lot of potential, and there's a lot of them that never talk about it. And
was there one politician, one moment, one thing that for you was like, all right, I got to do this, I got to get involved?
I'm always been involved in, yeah, if there's any, like yesterday I was in the protest in Homestead, mm-hmm. yeah, about, you know, the child detention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the child detention
down
there.
So I'm always been, since I was back in home in Puerto Rico, I'm always been very active in different causes. So, yeah, it's just been, I think, in my whole life, I think that was back home with my mom and the way she talked me, yeah.
Yeah. And for you, what role, though, do you see yourself playing in politics? What would be ideal?
Well, so you never know, but I'm more like behind the scenes, as you mentioned. I think all of us have certain talents, so I think we can use that to help women. Like, for example, maybe not now, I don't want to run now, but I can use my talents, I don't know, like maybe writing or social media or encouraging other women to run. So maybe in my community or my friends or with the people that I know, like if you see a talent or you see a woman that might be interested, so it's like, hey, mm-hmm. have you ever think about running for office? And I think, yeah, I think we are seeing a big wave of women, as we saw in the last midterm election.
In 2018.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Erin, in what ways is Glenda representative of many of the women that get involved in Vote Run Lead?
I'm smiling here in the studio in New York because she's very representative of, you know, we have about about 25% of women who are coming of the I think it was close to 1,100 women signed up right now in the 20 cities, and about 25% of them are there to help other women run. And the rest, about 10% are running currently right now, and the rest are looking for that sort of short-term two to three-year plan. So we have a whole subset of women who are really dedicated to, maybe they're not the candidate right now or they're not thinking about it right now, but they want to make sure that they get these skills. They want to see more women running. They want to figure out what role they can play on a campaign. And they know that they have something to give. And like Glenda, so many of these women have been involved in their communities, have been raised, you know, by strong women to get involved. When you see something wrong that's happening, say something, stand up. But to think about ourselves as those elected leaders, that's the thing we've got to change. We've got to wake up every morning and think, I can be president, I can be the city councilor, I can be the state legislator, writing the pieces of legislation that are going to change these lives, or that are going to never see legislation that we don't want even make to the light of day. So it's that shift from being the activist to being the elected leader.
I'm talking with Erin Velarde, the founder and CEO of the nonprofit organization Vote Run Lead. They're leading the nationwide event Run As You Are, happening this weekend, training thousands of women interested in getting involved in politics. Also joining me in studio is Glenda Rosado, the Miami organizer for the Vote Run Lead event happening again this weekend. If you're interested in getting any of the details about the event, you can find it on Twitter or Facebook, WLRN Sundial. Erin, how do you start to develop the knowledge base of the political world for any of these women who are starting, who want to start, who want to get involved? As you said, you may not have to have a background in politics, but doesn't politics play a certain way and you kind of have to understand that game?
Absolutely. So one of the things that happened following the 2016 presidential election was, you know, our webinar classes went from 50, maybe 100 women to 1,500 women signing up. And the bulk of those women did not have traditional political experience. So we went to our trainers. We've actually just hit 99 certified trainers around the country. We went to some of our local trainers and said, how do we ramp up women's political expertise in a short period of time and help them build that capital that's needed and to play that game? So we've created something called the 90-Day Challenge, and that's one of the modules we're actually going to run this Saturday all across the country. So the 90-Day Challenge is really kickstarts your political career and is a good refresher for the folks who, you know, may not be as savvy on social media or need to, you know, refresh on some of the latest political strategies. And it's 30 steps you can take in 90 days, and you should figure out what office to run for. You'll figure out sort of who are the political power players in your community, and you'll make sure you have, you know, the right Twitter handles and social media presence.
You know, I wondered too, because as I said before, this is a greater focus is on really the smaller elections. It's not the big national ones, but really the state and local. And I'm wondering, mm-hmm. you know, Erin, and I want to hear Glenda from you, is how important for people to understand how important those smaller seats really are?
Well, a few things. One, legislation often gets tested out at the local level. And so that, you know, it is an indicator for how things can possibly rise up and get out of state legislatures and up to the Congress. Two, you saw in Florida with the enfranchising of, you know, formerly convicted felons, right? Getting the right to vote in Florida. So these are things that are happening on a local level, which really sort of can set the stage nationally. But it's also deeply caring about your neighbors. Do you want to have downtown revitalization? And do you want to make sure that those companies that come in have the values that you want to see in South Florida? You know, if you want to look around your neighborhood and have parks and, you know, things that your children can, you know, enjoy and your family can enjoy, the zoning laws, the water boards, all of that stuff is happening at the local level. The environmental issues, all of that is very much happening neighbor to neighbor at local councils.
Glenda, we're coming up on, you know, another big election year. What do you see yourself doing in 2020?
Well, yeah, as always, volunteer, you know, as much as I can. Like,
are there certain campaigns, certain organizations that you spend more time with?
Yeah, there's a few local organizations. So, and then when I choose, you know, the candidate that I'm gonna support, I go for it. But buy my sticker.
You haven't chosen yet.
No, not yet.
Yeah, okay. What about local races though, or local people?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the same. Like volunteering, like. Maybe if I have, you know, with my skills in social media, texting or like posting online and volunteering at the events. So, you know, there's like small things that you can do that can make a big difference. So, yeah.
When do you think you'll make that decision on the candidates you want to spend time with? What do you have to see? I mean, there are a lot. And again,
yes,
not just
yes.
the presidential race. We're talking mm-hmm. about yeah. local. There's so many local races.
Yes. It's very important, you know, their policies. It's not just, you know, what we're seeing now in the national, you know, with the presidential candidate, I mean, at least for the Democratic side. So we see, you know, like a lot of like celebrity, like, you know, like in talk shows and stuff. But I want to know about policies, you know. I want to know about the issues that matters, at least, for example, to me, like about reproductive rights, about, you know, fair wages for women, because, yeah, mm-hmm. unfortunately, we are still fighting for, you know, be equal, you know, in equal pay, maternity leave, for example, you know, student loan debt, that's an issue that, it's very close, yeah, to me as
and
well.
And then once you figure out the candidates you want, mm-hmm. you want to work with, you reach out to them and say, I'm here, I can volunteer.
Yeah. Usually they reach out to me because we get all the emails from, you know, campaigns or from previous years. So they're always looking.
You get to choose.
Yeah. You know, like with their emails. So, but it's important for us as women to take a look at you know, at their policies. It's not just, you mm-hmm. know, who, you know, talk nice or it's nice or do certain things. It's just about, yeah, policies that are going to affect us in the future.
Erin, one of the interesting things about this is making people aware of the commitment when you're getting involved in politics, especially if you're running for office. And I'm wondering how that is communicated to many of these potential candidates when they come in. This may be part of the understanding the myth. It's like, what really is going to go into this?
Mm-hmm. Well, luckily for us, many of our certified national trainers have been elected officials, so they can speak firsthand. Our speakers play this role. Nancy Mateer will be there. She just ran for mayor of Coral Springs. Raquel Regalado will be there. She's a former Miami-Dade school board member. And so they speak firsthand. And women ask really candid questions. You know, how did you do it with children? How did you do it? How did you date as a single woman? You know, did that stop as you were sort of busily campaigning? What time management tools did you use? Did you have everyone synced up on the same Google calendar? All the way to the big stuff of saying, when you were just exhausted, how did you make time for self-care? So those questions really get answered in a personal way by the stories and strategies that our trainers and speakers have employed.
And, you know, I mean, again, it's one thing if you're running for a big office, but even if you're running for a city council or for the school board, you know, and they may meet only certain times of the week or the month, but how much time goes into this? It's a lot more than you might think. Let's get to the money. And, you know, this is just the part of politics. It's the fundraising. Erin, how much of the training focuses on that? How much of the training focuses on building coalitions but getting the dollars? Because to run for office, you need the money.
Yes and no. I mean, I think these are some of the myths that also keep women out. Some local races cost a few thousand dollars to run. Some, you know, state legislative races cost, you know, maybe $10,000 to run. You know, there's 519,682 offices across America, and not every one of them is a million-dollar congressional campaign. In fact, most of those 500,000 seats are going uncontested and are won by sweat equity. So a lot of the stereotypes about federal level offices trickle down to the local level. But say you have to raise $80,000 or $100,000 for a state legislative race, right? Maybe in Florida you're talking about $150,000. You figure out how that comes through a mapping exercise. We've got fundraising 101 and fundraising 201, and we've got follow up webinars, you know, by some of the best fundraising trainers. But a big part of what we're doing at Vote Run Lead is actually teaching women that they are well worth every single one of those pennies, and that when they go out and talk about what they're going to do, you're not asking people, you know, to do you a favor. You're asking people to build something better with you at the lead. And that's the kind of transformative stuff that's a little bit different about Vote Run Lead. It's not like, okay, let's put our pennies together and add them up. We'll get to that. But the first part is that you've got to go out there believing you are the right person for the job, and that you're not just going to raise $150,000, you're going to raise $250,000. And that is a total mind shift for women that I think takes us out of a deficit approach and really gets us, yeah, really makes us successful.
Just, I have to finish up here real quickly. Glenda, in 30 seconds, if you could, what do you tell women about this event this weekend and why they should go? What to expect?
Yeah, so I invite all the fabulous women in Miami to join us and the WeWare location in downtown Miami. If you have any questions, you can write us at info@voterunlead.org.
And we'll put that up on our website.
So. So it's going to be very exciting and a great opportunity to meet and connect with amazing women in the city. So I'll see you on Saturday.
We heard from Erin Velarde, the founder and CEO of the nonprofit organization Vote Run Lead. They're leading the nationwide event Run As You Are, happening this weekend, training thousands of women interested in getting involved in politics. We also heard from Glenda Rosado, the Miami organizer for Vote Run Lead. Again, more information about this event will be up on our Twitter and Facebook at WLRN Sundial. Erin, thank you so much. Glenda, I really appreciate it. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you so much. I'm a big fan.
All right, and that's our program for this Monday, May 13th. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.